Hello and welcome to More or Less. We're the programme that demystifies data and simplifies stats. I'm Lucy Proctor. This week, we'll be taking a dive into one of the most controversial numbers stories around. Sports bodies worldwide face a challenge. How can they maintain fairness in women's competitions while including trans women? Now, a trans swimmer in America's elite college competition has brought that question into sharp relief.
The historic performances of a swimmer at the University of Pennsylvania are getting a lot of attention.
She's smashing records in the U.S. women's competition.
Because she keeps winning.
Finishing one race a full 38 seconds ahead of the closest rival.
Leah Thomas, who was born male, competed for three seasons on the men's team for the University of Pennsylvania and began transitioning in 2019. Now racing in the female category for her first season, she's swum the fastest times in college athletics in the 200 and 500 freestyle and is now ranked number one for these events. While some hail this as a breakthrough for trans visibility, others see Leah Thomas's inclusion in female races as unfair. And that's because of the changes that testosterone produces in male bodies during puberty. Ross Tucker is one of the world's leading sports scientists and advises World Rugby and UK Sport on their trans inclusion policies.
Leah Thomas, as a person who's gone through a puberty as a biological male, would have benefited significantly from the effects of testosterone and other male hormones on development. And we know that those hormones have significant performance-enhancing effects because they do things like increase muscle mass and strength, increase the size of the heart and the lungs, reduce body fat, and they change the skeleton.
These changes explain why males swim on average 10 to 12% faster than females, based on competition race times. Until very recently, American college athletics regulations and most sports bodies globally used a number, the nanomole per litre, to measure the amount of testosterone in the blood. And what that number said decided whether you could compete in the women's category. A typical adult male would have between 8 and 30 nanomoles per litre of testosterone, while a typical adult female has levels about 10 times lower, between 0.5 and 3 nanomoles per litre. So far, rules have dealt with trans women athletes by requiring them to use drugs to suppress their testosterone levels for 1 year to below 10 nanomoles per litre, which Leah Thomas did. That 10 figure doesn't bring trans women's testosterone down to typical female levels.
When sport was first confronted with this challenge, I think they looked at testosterone by virtue of the fact that it's the cause of the difference. They thought that it might be the solution of the difference too.
But the rules around testosterone are shifting all the time. Last year, new guidelines released by the International Olympic Committee dropped any testosterone requirement and also shifted decisions around trans inclusion to specific sports bodies, while stating that there should be no presumption of performance advantage. Then, in the wake of Leah Thomas's victories, USA Swimming changed the testosterone level requirement for elite swimmers to under 5 nanomoles per litre for 3 years before competition, and also now requires proof from trans athletes that they do not have an unfair advantage over their competitors. Other sports are now revisiting their policies. So does reducing testosterone in trans sportswomen put them on a level playing field with females?
That is the million-dollar question and really the crux of the issue. So what we do know comes from a set of about a dozen studies tracking trans women over the course of 12 months or more. And they administer these drugs that effectively lower their testosterone levels to well below that 10 level, to back within the female range. And those studies universally show the same thing, and that's that if you have an initial difference in muscle strength of, say, 30 to 50%, the studies suggest that lowering testosterone reduces it by between 5 and 9%. Obviously, the skeletal mass and the bone density have been shown not to change at all, and then muscle volume and muscle mass have been shown to come down by about 5% when the initial difference is 30 to 40%. There is only one study that's looked at athletic performance. That study was done in the military out of Kansas, and it also found that 1 year of testosterone suppression was insufficient to remove typical male advantages. In this instance, it was a running task, and after 3 years, strength endurance, like push-ups and sit-ups, might be reversed.
So, suppressing testosterone reduces some of the physiological advantages that trans women have, but it doesn't remove them. And Leah Thomas's race times seem to fit that pattern. Since transitioning, she's 2.7% slower in the 200 freestyle. But over that sprint distance, males have an advantage of around 11%. So she's gone from being the 462nd fastest college swimmer in 2018-19 in the men's category to the fastest over 200 yards this year in the women's. She's currently 6-7% slower than before at longer distances, where males have around an 8% advantage. Despite all the focus on testosterone, and perhaps confusingly, testosterone levels on the day don't predict athletic performance.
At the Olympic Games last year, if you'd ranked the men competing in the 100-meter final by testosterone, you would not have a very good chance of guessing who was going to win come second, third and fourth in that race. And I think that there are certain people in this debate who have interpreted that to mean that testosterone doesn't make the difference to sports performance. And that's a basic error that they make. In that sense, it's very similar to asking a question like, does height make a difference to professional basketball? Now, everyone knows the answer to that. It's obviously yes. But the interesting thing is that if you went to the NBA and you measured the height of those players, the best players are not necessarily the tallest players within the NBA. Similarly, having high oxygen consumption, high VO2 max, is an important determinant of marathon running success. But if we looked at the Olympic marathon athletes standing on the start line, it would be a very poor predictor of marathon success. Now, why is that? That's because everyone already has it. If you want to be an NBA player, if you want to be a marathon runner, you need the ticket to get through the door into the room. And that ticket is height for the NBA player. That ticket is VO2 max for the marathon runner. But once you're inside, then your ticket is no longer useful to you because everyone else has it too. And so then other things start to matter. Your skill, your speed, your power, your stamina, your decision-making, emotional aspects. And so now, using those two analogies, think about male and female. We have a space in sport for females and a space in sport for males. And the ticket to get through the door is having testosterone during development for males. But once those males are in the male room and the females are in the female room, then the testosterone is no longer relevant because, again, all the males are already in possession of that ticket. And so if a person decides to go from the male room into the female room, they bring with them those benefits from when they were developing, growing up, becoming adults. And so all of a sudden, you start to skew the outcome of sports events because rather than rewarding all the things that should be important for the outcome, you start to actually reward the person who has the testosterone ticket. And that's the fundamental issue.
Several studies are now underway to more accurately quantify sporting advantages for trans women athletes and also to study the performance effect of mitigating measures like testosterone suppressants. But it's going to take years to get good data. And for some, data is not the point. They think trans athletes should be allowed to compete in whatever category they choose. One thing is clear, measuring testosterone levels doesn't tell the whole story. That's all we have time for this week, but please keep your questions or comments coming in to moreorless@bbc.co.uk. Tim will be back next week, and until then, thanks for listening.